Blog Talk Radio.
Tell me that there is no veteran's preference.
Welcome to On Point, the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Don. Beautiful day here in the Twin Cities for both our domestic and international audience. Beautiful day here in the Twin Cities. We've had basically real good weather for the last number of weeks. Things are not necessarily pleasant for the city of Minneapolis, and it's law enforcement. I tell you, stories just continue to break on almost an hourly basis now with respect to the level of racism and animus and hatred of African Americans. I tell you, it's not a pleasant situation. But, you know, Mr. Allen, I'd like to do this because this person has been a frequent caller to our programs over the last couple of years and is a well-known peace activist in our community,
yes.
Has been attempting. Our prayers go out to K.G. Wilson. And our prayers go out to his son, who is now in a local hospital. We will not identify, for reasons of security, the location. His son gunned down in North Minneapolis Thursday evening, if I'm not mistaken, Don. The conversations we had unknown gunman. K.G. Wilson, who has been very much involved in vigils for others and et cetera, now conducting his own personal and very lonely vigil. No news coverage. The media has refused to report the shooting of K.G. Wilson, a longtime community minister and activist in our city. Again, his son in critical condition in a local hospital after being shot on Fremont and Broadway in North Minneapolis, an area that supposedly is heavily patrolled by Minneapolis bike officers, horse officers, squad cars, and et cetera. But I guess they weren't anywhere around when gunmen opened fire on K.G. Wilson's son. So our prayers go out to K.G. Wilson, to the mother of the young man, and to friends and relatives.
Yes, and Mr. Edwards, I'd like to let our listeners know today that our show today is brought to us by the letters N for no, the letter B for black, and the letter L for leadership. No black leadership here in the Twin Cities.
NBL.
NBA.
Kind of like the NBA, but doesn't even begin to have the quality, if you will, of the NBA. Well, we've got a lot, Mr. Allen. But let's give the phone number so folks know that the phone lines will be open. What are we going, an hour and a half today?
We're going an hour and a half today, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So we will be on for 1.5 hours. This is for our listeners across the world, England, India, Indonesia, and et cetera.
We'd like to welcome our listeners in New Zealand, South Korea, the UK, and Australia today.
All right, then. All right. I know I have some friends in Melbourne that have been in contact with us. So our international portfolio continues to grow, if you will.
Yes.
Okay. And that phone number, Mr. Allen, so the lines are open.
The phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And, Mr. Edwards, I did send a message to Minister K.G. Wilson, who is out on Broadway Avenue as we speak, to give us a call when he has a moment. And so during the show here, if that number shows up, I will make sure that, you know, we get him in right away to discuss what's going on here in the Twin Cities.
Absolutely, Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen, yesterday, front page, Minneapolis Star Tribune, largest paper in the state, headline talking in terms of another incident of Minneapolis police officers being involved in the beating of African Americans, racial epithets. Oh, man, I guess this is something they must do in training with no African. Well, they don't have that many African American officers on this department anyway. Let me just say, the article in yesterday morning's paper, and then on the front page of the Metro section, the chief, Janae Hartill, indicating that she intends to address the question of race and et cetera, and I'm not quite sure why she waited so long. She could have addressed this when she was serving as interim chief in September and definitely November of last year, when the Apple Valley, that's become synonymous now with Green Bay, if you will.
Yes.
But articles in the papers today and et cetera. But I must put you on notice, Mr. Allen, and our listening audience, that a white manifesto, a white paper, has emerged. In fact, it was clandestinely placed in the, get this, man, the personal mailboxes of senior African-American officers in the last 4 days.
Wow.
And it is ugly. It is ugly. It is ugly. I mean, it talks about black officers being animals and unqualified, should not be in any position, if you will, within this department, speaks in terms of a new day, if you will, of white privilege and et cetera. A new manifesto. Now, here's what's interesting. The officer who actually was forced to resign, but not because of this, but because he would get this, and what is the surprise? He was under federal investigation. The officer that was the quote-unquote chief author of the White Manifesto had resigned from the department about 7 or 8 months ago, so, you know, should not have had access. Yet these officers, these black senior officers, all in different precincts, you know, in other words, different buildings, this officer, former officer, was able to access each of those precincts with his operatives, if you will, and leave these manifestos in their mailboxes. Can you believe that? And everyone
that
pretends that they did not see him or did not know about it. And initially it was a chuckle. Let me just give you a couple quick pieces about a couple of things that have happened here, just, you know, to lay out kind of how this department is operating. Then we'll get to the main pieces of Apple Valley, Green Bay investigations. In the manifesto, the authors of the document, obviously members of a very, you know, clandestine, racist group of officers in the department, the architect was an officer by the name of Spencer. You know, there are folks out there know all about him. He was under federal investigation for violating federal law and harassing a very respected former homicide police sergeant by the name of Dunlap. She has since retired, if you will. And Spencer was harassing her, threatening her, and et cetera, because he was angry about the fact that she, at a point of time in her life a couple years ago, was going with a Native American police officer. And Dunlap is white. This officer died of natural causes, the Native American officer, Officer Roach, a couple years ago. Very well respected and et cetera. This officer became so enraged with respect to her relationship with this Native American officer that he began to take it upon himself to harass her. So what happened was, a year ago, thereabouts, she took a vacation, went to Mexico. He entered her database, was attempting to allege that she was stealing time, if you will, and et cetera, and actually was able to access, and if I were the black commander of the Homeland Security Detail, a gentleman by the name of Commander Harris, Lieutenant Harris, I'm sorry, I would be kind of concerned because Spence was able to access the information, certain information from the Homeland Security Unit here in the Minneapolis Police Department, Don.
Yes.
And then made contact with Homeland Security in Washington, indicated that he was an investigator, that Sergeant Dunlap was being investigated for conduct unbecoming and possibly even terrorist contacts and et cetera, violated all kinds of federal laws. Well, anyways, they caught him. They caught him. And so what they allowed him to do was to retire while still under federal investigation. But he got back at them by being able to put together this white manifesto and deliberate by his operatives to senior black officers in this police department. I have been a longtime vocal advocate of what has happened to our Black Police Officers Association, which was destroyed by a group of officers, many of them of either the individuals that are being talked about now or connected with the individuals involved in the Wolf Apple Valley incident and Green Bay. And,
yes.
The chickens are just coming home to roost. If we have any calls, let's
yes,
get to them. If not, there's a...
We do have a caller.
Let's get the caller. Let's get
him. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Caller, you're live on the air. Turn on your computer. Okay. We're going to try to get
we can't do anything with that. They have to call back. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me lay out one other to show you how bad things and petty things are. The officer who was in the forefront in 2006, 2007 in destroying the Black Police Officers Association, rallying white police officers against the African Americans, though those African Americans sued and won in federal court. Remember, we've talked about that on this program over a number of years. But the officer that was legendary, and I've identified him as giving testimony at trial last May of 2012, in which he had the nerve to try to sue the city for allowing retaliation by black officers, in which he just talked about black police officers like they had tails.
Well, sir, we have a caller back.
All right, let's get him. Let's get him. Okay.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please. Caller, you're live on the air.
You know what that is? That's KG talking to a crowd. He'll have to call us when he's separate from that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we've got to move it. This officer who was at the pinnacle, if you will, the lead officer in the destruction of the black officers and et cetera, worked closely with federal officers in trying to set black officers up. He has a 19-year-old daughter, and we're going to complete on this one now. He'll still call her mm-hmm. after hold. He has a 19-year-old daughter. She entered into a relationship with a young African-American while going to school, as I understand it, at University of Minnesota Duluth. And what happened? She became pregnant. Okay. These things happen. Her father, who is a high-ranking officer in the Sheriff's Department, Hennepin County Sheriff's Department, where he transferred just 4 months ago for the Minneapolis Police Department to get out from under the pressure over there, he has told his colleagues that he is disowning his daughter. He is disowning his daughter.
Oh, no.
And we say that so that some of the homeboys know that we know just how bad this thing is, how much animus there is in this department. He has denounced his own daughter. Her mother, who is also a Minneapolis police officer, is beside herself with hurt and pain and anger that the good sergeant would do that, if you will. He said he wants nothing to do with anybody who has anything to do with, the NIGs kind of thing, and will not recognize his grandchild. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, no. That's amazing.
And these people are on the streets patrolling. Go ahead. What do we got?
And we have another caller on the line.
All right. Let's get it.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
How you guys doing this afternoon?
Doing
real good. What's your question?
You know what? I don't think that there's no surprise, especially to black folks, that this is happening. I'm often bewildered of how the shock and awe by other folks that this is happening. Black folks for years, especially within the last 15 years, have been complaining about the police brutality and that the rate of lack thereof of communications between the black community and the police officers. I find it a slap in the face when you hear this police chief and the previous police chief say that we're going to reach out to black leaders and find out how they can help us address the problem between cops and blacks. Well, the one thing you got to do is you got to hire honest cops, okay? You need more black officers. Not only just black, you need more minority-oriented officers. And those in position, okay? You can't bring a white officer in a black community and ask to be trusted when he's calling them out of their name on videotape or when their cousin or loved one just got beat up by one. It should not come to any surprise that this happened. This is what Minneapolis police officers, most of them, think of black folks. This is how they think of us. Okay, they think of us as uneducated blacks. So
Animals. Yeah. Go ahead.
Exactly. So until we get a firm hand on the fact that white officers don't get along with the black community because they perceive us as animals, there will never, ever be a true policing in our communities. And it's sad because at the rate that the black-on-black crime is growing, that we don't have that innocent people in those neighborhoods, because every neighborhood where there's crime isn't bad. It's a shame that we can't trust officers to come around and do the right thing. You don't when children are being murdered in the streets, you don't see black folks willing to pick up the phones to call officers. Now, should we? Absolutely. We should aid in the investigation to bring in any type of assailant, no matter the color. But can
absolutely.
You blame a black person for not wanting to pick up the phone to work with a white investigator when he or she feels that they're going to be belittled and are looked upon as less than?
Sir, you're absolutely right. Let me just call attention for our listening audience and for those in the Twin Cities who have not read this morning's paper. And I had predicted it to my associate, Mr. Allen, that this would be a modus operandi. The editorial page has two interesting articles, excluding, of course, on the front page of the Metro section, the statement by Chief Harto. The editorial is get to the bottom of police misconduct. Wow, how many times I've seen these kinds of editorials in these newspapers. The other is, get this, Mr. Allen and caller, a letter, the top letter on Reader's Right is what it's called. Former MPD chief, force is not immune to human flaws.
Whoa.
And that's
still
going.
Imagine that.
Yeah,
can you
believe that? Because that's something that they say altogether different. As you said, sir, when we in the African-American community, well, those of us that are bold enough to do such, raise the question about misconduct and inconsistency in the application of law and et cetera, we're told that these people are perfect and that there could not have been whatever it is that we black people are alleging because these officers are of a perfect species, okay? Just wanted to give us a heads up, this morning's edition of the paper. The system is already moving to try to minimize the possibility, gentlemen, of this department being placed in federal receivership. In fact, in the editorial, they mention Pittsburgh, which is kind of the icon, if you will, of a department that went bad that looks like things had kind of been put back in place. But I have to remember, and I have to remind, that for 5 years, this department was under a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Justice, and for 5 years, a group of citizens gave their time freely, willingly, without support, gentlemen, from African-American leadership in this town in an attempt to try to correct some of the problems and the animus and et cetera in this department, and were undermined and criticized at every turn, now, though not openly. They were cowards about it. So I have to say to you that this is not the first time. In fact, later on in this program, caller, we will be giving historical dates of when we've been through, and I certainly appreciate your opening comments, when we have gone through this same process time and time. I go all the way back to 1961. Wow. With respect to gentlemen from our community, you know, talking and editorials coming out in the Minneapolis Star and the Minneapolis Tribune and the Minneapolis Times. See, I take people back a long way. They didn't even know it was a newspaper called the Minneapolis Times, which merged with the Star Tribune Company. So I've seen these editorials. I've seen these comments. I've seen these tongue-in-cheek references and reflections. When what you said, sir, caller, these folks know they have no intention of correcting anything.
Absolutely. And you know what, Mr. Edwards? When I hear Chief Hartall speak, it's laughable because you think, first of all, she's playing a lot of lip service. You have to be politically correct. But I think she's only upset because they mentioned her sexual orientation.
Bingo.
If she wasn't insulted, she would not have given a darn. So again, quit playing with our intelligence. When we don't have black representation, well, I have so much respect for Mr. Allen, who's on Facebook all the time for his people. Despite, I'm sure he has a hard time with black folks giving him a hard time about being a Republican. He doesn't care. The man is for his people. It doesn't matter what letters behind your name when you care. We don't have enough blacks representing us, and then they tell us that's our fault. Well, how is it our fault? We don't own the campaign contributions and things of that nature. So until we, again, St. Paul had a black police chief. He's not longer there. Minneapolis, I mean, I've only lived here since 1990. I don't remember a black police chief here. Again, we ran the black mayor.
Oh, there's never been one in the history of Minneapolis, no. Uh-uh.
Never been one, you said, Mr. Edwards?
No, never been a black chief, and never will be. There will never be a black chief.
There never will be.
No.
They got rid of the police civilian review board because the civilian review board kept a count of how many complaints against the police officers were being unfounded. They got rid of that. So there's no accountability for the policing of the police officers. I have a lot of respect for the mayor, the outgoing mayor.
But I don't, but go ahead. I definitely don't. But go ahead. I understand. Go ahead. You have a right to absolute your opinion. But go ahead.
But until someone, well, you know, let me say this then. I respect some of the things that he's done here. Let me rephrase that.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But until someone, again, takes on the police union, because it's not enough to suspend these guys. We're still paying them. They're still taking my tax-earned money on suspension after insulting guys in another state. You have to be willing to take on the unions, fire these guys. Like, I don't remember. I'll say this and hang up, guys. I don't know if you remember when Mayor Beld wanted to fire a police officer, I think, for some type of misconduct. She did fire him, but the police union got him his job back twice after he was found guilty of the accusation that he was accused of.
So mm-hmm.
The unions stand behind these guys, which I can't be mad at unions because that's what you pay for, but there's no accountability for Minneapolis police, and it's the problem that we're having now is only going to get worse because it's not going to get addressed now.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Ms. Allen, for purposes of transparency, clarity, and et cetera, the caller touched on a number of issues, and it's obvious that he's been paying attention for a long time. I want to do this so we don't have to be bothered with something that was said by a so-called black minister back in 2007, that black police officers have to stand up and be counted and et cetera. And by the way, one of the most legendary black police officers who stood up and was counted, if you will, and actually won over $1 million in damages from the city of Minneapolis for racism and other actions against her franchise was a person by the name of Sergeant Alicia Clemens. See, people tend to forget that. And actually, there was an attempt to jail her because they blamed her for hate mail, which is similar to the white manifesto that was delivered to black police officers just a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. And Sergeant Clemens, who did resign from the department and was clearly a part of the negotiations, but she won two separate actions against this department of totaling over $1 million and courageously stood up when actually she was abandoned by many. The reason I talk in terms of her, 11 years later, five black officers, all of command rank, if you will, Arredondo, Harris, Adams, Hamilton, and Edwards. And by the way, that was not that was Lieutenant Lee Edwards. He and I are not related. Filed a lawsuit in the federal district court here in Minnesota, if you will, on December 3rd, 2007. They laid out many of the things that this caller, and I assume other callers, or if they are callers, are thinking about and aware of. they laid out the disparate treatment of African American officers and everything, Don, from overtime to promotions to assignments and et cetera. And they received no support from our leadership.
No.
Okay. And let me also do this and then we'll move on to, if any, calls, but get into both Green Bay and et cetera. You know, I know that folks say, well, these two clowns are on the radio running their mouths and et cetera. What have they ever done? Well, we've done this on behalf of our community. I would refer you, and it has to tie in with something Mr. Allen and I will be talking about a little bit later, and that is Chief Hartold's suggestion that Velma Corvell and the Civil Rights Department and Kip Brown get involved.
Mr.
With handling. Yes.
That's what I want to talk to you about. I'm disturbed about that. You know.
Yeah, well,
let me
do this.
Go ahead.
Because there's a history here. I would refer people, when you want to talk in terms of what have we done, why do we have so much knowledge, to a complaint that yours truly filed in 2007 against the Minneapolis Police Department on behalf of black officers and a white lieutenant by the name of Michael Keith, and that's a story within itself. But I'm just going to give folks, you know, who are out there saying, well, what are these guys doing? The charge number was A6457-EM-1F-RP. I filed that complaint. It took a whole year for them to get rid of it. But the man that undermined the complaint, sabotaged the complaint, acting on orders from Chief Tim Dolan, was the man that Velma Corvell has suggested will handle this next process, Kip Brown.
Oh, no.
He was at that time acting director of the Civil Rights Department, if you will.
That's not good. Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, I was reading in the Star Tribune, which what we call the Johannesburg Times, you know, Chief Hartold called for dialogue following racial incidents, and that caller was absolutely on point. But people have to understand who Velma Corbell is and who the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights are and what they have done. And in here, she says she's going to reach out to, like, the faith-based leadership. It just sounds to me like another sellout. You know, that they have
Well, here's the thing that's dangerous and so disingenuous is that apparently some bloggers over the last 24 hours immediately went into the city's database, you know, because they wanted to check about this committee that Chief Hartold and Velma and them are talking about. Do you know that they secretly took applications and identified and positioned seven individuals that they wanted to be on this so-called committee? Being paid $50 for each meeting. Do you know that applications closed on the 28th of June? And there's been no public hearing scheduled. See, the city charter says that when people are being nominated for offices and commissions and et cetera, there must be a public hearing so that the public has the right to watch the people being examined with respect to their qualifications, right? Do you know that they closed the application? Again, I give you the date. By the way, that date was exactly one day before the incident in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Wow.
Which was the 29th of June. But, Mr. Allen, the seven people, because it would be four by the city council, three by the mayor, would allegedly be appointed, don't you know they have already cut the deal on who these seven people are going to be? And the world should be asking, well, who are they, and when were they introduced to the general public that they are supposed to protect and serve?
And this is for the Police Conduct Oversight Commission, correct?
That is absolutely correct, sir.
Okay.
I encourage all Webers and et cetera, go to the Minneapolis website, and you will find the smoking gun. I hate to say it like that, given as much violence as we have in our city. But you will find that applications closed on the 28th of June.
Yep. Applications will be collected until Friday, June 28th. Seven open positions. Four shall be appointed by the city council, three by the mayor, subject to approval. Requirement, Minneapolis residency. Application may not be currently or previously employed. Applicant may not be employed by the Minneapolis Police Department. That's a gimme. References may be provided and will be checked. And Mr. Edwards, they have a list of things that all commissioners must do. have the ability to read, apply logic, evaluate complex information, okay, have excellent writing skills, have competent communication and presentation skills, facilitate, along with the police department, appropriate cultural awareness training to sworn officers and as determined by the commission, contribute to the performance review of the police chief, and I'm just going to skip down here, be able to complete training regarding police use of force and the Minnesota Government Data Practice Act, open meeting laws, and the public employee applications. Let me just see here. To deliver your application, which is now too late, to the city clerk, and commission contact, Michael K. Brown, Assistant Director of Civil Rights, Office of Police Conduct Review.
The same Michael Brown that I just identified as being very much involved in the shredding. By the way, let me just say this, because we've been following this for quite some time, because at the time that I filed that complaint, I was a representative and a monitor for the Department of Justice. As I said before, the complaint cannot be found per se. Corvell and Kim Brown and others ordered it, shredded. Many of those documents shredded. And before Samuel Reed left here to go to Atlanta, as he abandoned his position as the outgoing executive director of the Civilian Review Authority, many, many, many documents were shredded. And I'm aware that the complaint that yours truly filed in 2007, as a member of the Federal Oversight Committee for the Department of Justice, that after they were able to, you know, sandbag it, they started shredding the documentation. But, of course, as I said, I have the original files and et cetera here in my secret, quote-unquote, enclave. And, by the way, in that document
The phone lines are open. That number is 34.
Go ahead. What was it? Now, go ahead and give it.
No, I was just going to give the telephone number again, but... Okay, that telephone number again is 347-426-3904. The phone lines are open. Again, that number is 347-426-3904.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about Apple Valley, man. Let's get into that.
Let's do that. That's pretty serious right there.
By the way, Apple Valley happened on the 19th day of November in the year of our Lord 2012. I find it interesting that the chief and the department's hierarchy talk as if this was something new. What is so disturbing about this as it pertains to honesty and transparency, that these two officers, Officer Allen was allowed to have the, you know, the charges were dropped because it was so embarrassing. These officers pleaded guilty. I thought that Channel 4 and 5 did a real poor job yesterday in allegedly reporting the Bogart, that's the club. They pleaded guilty, Mr. Allen. In fact, one of them was sent to 4 days in the Dakota County Jail, the equivalent to the workhouse. And as we reported on these programs 3 weeks ago, he was, a couple of days after being released, was arrested for DWI.
Good job.
And yet he has been allowed to continue his functions as a Minneapolis police officer working on the street dealing with black citizens. Given the level of disdain and hatred that he and others have displayed, that's not what they're thinking about. I'm now talking about the kind of conduct that they have displayed. And they are a part of the group involved with the development of the White Manifesto.
Wow.
Yeah. It is a sad day. But I'm trying to find out if at some point the chief is going to be able to explain why she had not begun a investigation for the purposes of discharging. See, I have to agree with Councilman Don Samuels that these officers need to be dispatched from the Minneapolis Police Department. But it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You can rest assured that it will not happen. But the chief needs to explain.
No, I was just going to say, I'm looking at this, and the police, the Sergeant Tribune actually tried to contact the police chief before the story got published, and she was not available for comment on Thursday, is what it
said. In fact, specifically what she told them was that she would be unavailable. Her PR person, or public information officer, PI, Burlington, indicated that she would not be available for consultation and reflection. Now, I'm being told that my good friend, longtime co-chair with me of the PCRC, Clyde Belcourt, has indicated in what may be a copyrighted story over the next couple of days that he is in favor of asking for federal receivership. So things are beginning to mount against this department. And so I have to say, as a longtime monitor, both in the fire department and the police department, that what you see going on right now, Mr. Allen, is a desperate attempt to head off this department being placed in federal receivership, being taken over by the federal government, which I don't think is going to happen because the Obama administration is not going to do a lot to embarrass a quote-unquote good Democratic administration in the city of Minneapolis and the Democratic governor, Democratic mayor, Democratic city council, and et cetera. But that doesn't do anything for the health and welfare of black citizens. By the way, both in and outside, not only Minnesota, but as we now know in the case of Green Bay, that these boys take their show, put it on the road, and whip you wherever you are. You got some text coming in, Don? Because we're losing you.
Yeah, are you there? Looking at that right now. Yeah, we have I am here, Mr. Edwards. I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I hear you loud and clear. And
okay.
We do have a caller on the line.
All right, let's get the caller. Get him. Go ahead.
Caller on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Go ahead.
Hello.
KG.
Yeah, KG, what's going on? How you doing, brother?
Oh, man, you know, out here, man, on Broadway and Fremont, man. You know, where they shot my son in the neck.
How's your son doing? What's his condition? What's your son's condition?
He's doing a lot better. He's doing a lot better, you know.
Okay.
Whatever plan
okay.
they had, God had another plan for him.
Okay.
You know, so
okay.
I'm actually out here today and got a bunch of kids out here with me right now, my grandbaby, my daughter, a few of their friends and cousins. And so, you know, just out here, man, just...
Well, let me ask you this, Minister Wilson. I know that you're being joined by other ecumenical leadership and et cetera, aren't you? Aren't they there with you? You just didn't mention their
not
names,
today.
Right?
Not today. The only person who just left from out here, who was out here with me for about an hour, was Miss Helen Williams. She came out with me for about an hour. And,
wow.
But none of the other ones have came. Yesterday, I did thank Mad Dad for coming out and staying with me all day long, which was
a
great thing. But
BJ
not today.
Smith.
Not today.
Okay.
Not so far anyway. We've been out here since 1 o'clock.
Well,
and nobody has came out.
Has the chief and the 4th Precinct commander and the mayor's office reached out to you? What about Sherman Patterson? Has he reached out to you? He is the mayor's liaison for police and African-American contact. Sherman Patterson from the mayor's office come out to be with you.
Well, that sounds like a new one on me. I didn't even know it was all of that. But I haven't seen none of those people. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I've been over here since 1 o'clock, and I just now saw one police ride through here, which kind of lets me know that how easy it is for somebody to commit a crime and get away with it. In 2 hours or more. Yesterday we were out here 2.5 hours, and I hadn't seen not one police come through this area at all. So
well,
that kind of bothered me too.
Well, let me say this, that I am certainly aware that those are supposed to be hot zones, and the chief indicated a month and a half ago that these zones would be heavily patrolled and et cetera. You're saying that you went as long as 2.5 hours and never saw the presence of Minneapolis
of police
assignment?
At all. Not at all.
Maybe
we set out here, and it was strange to me that happened. And, you know, usually I do see them in certain areas, but I hadn't seen them. And just now, I've only seen one just a few minutes ago and since 1 o'clock.
Okay. Well, I have to ask you this question again, Minister. Wilson, you say that the precinct commander who's just down the street that has not come out to at least talk to you, extend, has anyone from the assault unit called you to tell you how the investigation is going?
Nope.
And is there a suspect in custody, sir?
Not that I know of. How you doing, brother? Not that I know
okay.
of.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Give me 1 second. Yes, sir. Yeah. So,
nope,
I haven't seen any of those people, haven't heard from anybody. And so, you know what, Ron and Don, if you guys know me for years, I'm not the type of guy that needs a crowd or somebody to pay me to come out in my community and do something. Even though I'm out here today for my son, I am still out here with a message to the community and to let them understand and know that even me as a peace activist, that if it can happen to my son, that it can happen to yours. And what are you going to do to keep it from happening to your son next? Do you even know where your son is right now? You know, this can happen too, and I've been saying this for years. Don have heard me warn them. I have warned them time after time, vigil after vigil, funeral after funeral that I have done for a lot of the people in the Minneapolis community. I take it they haven't been listening. There cannot be a greater message than this one right here of the person who's been warning you about what you need to do to change the conditions in your community, what we need to do in our community to make it a safer place for my son to be, me to be out here today for my son, today.
Gotcha.
And I wish I'll be out here every day until I get some justice.
All right. Minister Wilson, our prayers go with you and to your son and your immediate family and et cetera. Mr. Alvin, any observations you may have?
Well, I'd just like to say that I think that, Mr. Wilson and I talked about this, but we need to, this is something to march right down to the police chief's office Monday morning if they have not made an arrest, because I'm aware of some information that was shared with me in confidence. And so with that information, these police should get on a job, because it's really funny, Mr. Edwards, in our community, we can get killed and there's no suspects, there's no arrest. In the white community and other communities, you hear about this reported so-and-so was shot and killed. The autopsy was released the next day and the suspect released arrested the following day. And they put it to bed. With
that's
us,
right.
It's just like, yeah, whatever, you know, with these animals, they're killing themselves, you know?
Yeah,
so,
and that's the problem. All right, Minister KG, our prayers are with you. We hope that there's an apprehension of the assailant who shot and wounded your son, who is in critical condition. We declined to identify the hospital for the reasons of security. That's something that them folks play, so I think it's important that you do the same thing. But we thank you for taking the time to updating us, okay?
Yes, sir. God bless you all.
Oh, God bless you, sir. All right, I may see you this evening. Take care.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Mr. Allen, I just don't know how to handle
this.
Oh, let's get him. Caller.
A caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
All right, this is
caller.
Queen Lucci. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Queen, go right ahead.
Yes,
we hear you.
All right.
Welcome.
Yeah,
okay.
So I'm over here live on Franklin and Chicago, and, you know, this is another high popularity zone of people.
I can hear the police chatter. Go ahead, Queen Lucci.
What are they talking
about?
That's not from around me. I'm out here, and BJ is up the street, Mad Dad. I haven't really seen a police car stroll through here, and normally there's a police car that sits right here on the lot. And I think that we need to start having some conversation about racial justice. And, you know, I don't understand that some of this crime stuff that's going on is black on black, but my thing is that we need to have something somewhere on the ballots or something while we got these politicians running for office about racial equality and racial justice in our community. And I thank you all for having me on your show.
Thank you, my sister. All right. Well, here's another report from the other side of the city. For those of our domestic and international audience, we are a city that runs lengthwise, quite some distance. And so Franklin is a long ways from Broadway. Broadway's in North Minneapolis. Franklin is way in South Minneapolis. In fact, you have to go on the other side of downtown and et cetera. Here are two African-American activists who are saying they haven't seen any police. You think they're at the bar getting drunk down? Where do you think the police are at, man? They're not gonna jump out again tonight, are they? I mean,
I don't know. And it looks like we have another caller here, Mr. Edwards.
All right, get the caller. Get him.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please. Caller, you are live on the air, counting 1,000.
I think I dropped my call, Don. What I'm going to do is just listen. I like the show.
Okay,
all right, Queen.
You're in the queue, Queen. Thank you.
All right. Going back to the Apple Valley situation in which it was four African-Americans when you look at the police report. Two, though, the Spann nephew and uncle were beaten pretty severely. You know, one of the things, Mr. Allen, that no one is dealing with at this particular hour is that there was actually a total of 9, 10, 12 Caucasians, including a couple women. We're not sure if the women came out to try to stop the men from brutalizing these African-Americans that they were beating. But, you know, I'm hearing intel now that all of the Caucasians who are shown in the video inside the bar where you see the black men come in and try to be friendly and nod and extend their hand, and as Officer Wood has said, you know, niggers are not welcome in here. I hate to use that language, but it's necessary for the purpose of this program because that's our given name here in Minneapolis with the police, nigger, you know, nigger this, nigger that. But they were chased out of the bar, but the word I'm receiving is that all of those officers were members of the Minneapolis department. I just cannot understand why we are now being told, and it's not us, the Star Tribune, the prestigious Star Tribune, pointed out, because Mr. Spann told it. We finally got to a black victim that was prepared to stand up. You know, Internal Affairs did not contact them about this situation that took place back on the 19th of November 2012, did not contact them until 8 days ago. I'm just trying to understand, because these officers pleaded guilty on June 3rd in Dakota County. One was sentenced to 4 days in the lockup, okay? And by the way, rest assured, listeners and potential callers, that the reason for the deal that Dakota County Attorney Backstrom cut was that Apple Valley initially wanted them charged with hate crime. And if you're convicted of a hate crime, your peace officer's license is gone. You will no longer be allowed to be a peace officer / police officer in this state. So they cut a deal. They lied to the black victims. Again, I refer to the story in yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, you know, that Mr. Spann and his uncle were both told that there would be a trial and that these officers would be looking at a hate crime. Okay, now what has happened is that this has caught the interest of the Department of Justice because they're getting so many complaints in Washington about this department and some of the things that are going on that because there is a strike two already in place, and that was the memorandum of understanding signed by all, if you will, in October of 2003, Mr. Allen. You know, I was there. I was at the meeting. I'm one of the signatories, if you will. Yet 4 years later, I had to bring a personal action against the department for its treatment of black officers and a white lieutenant who stood up for justice. You know, the pattern in practice here is that I just don't know that this city, this department, has any interest in correcting anything, Mr. Allen.
No, we don't. Hey, Mr. Edwards, I just got a text in. Do you know if the Minneapolis Police Department has a residency requirement?
No, they have no residency requirement. In fact, the union ferociously fights that and contests that. In fact, probably 85% of the officers in the Minneapolis Department, including our black ones, I mean, let's be fair, we want to be transparent, live outside the corporate boundaries of the city of Minneapolis, or as we call the corporate limits of the city of Minneapolis.
Wow.
In fact, there's just a large enclave of these officers living up towards Rogers, Minnesota, and Hanover, and Medina, and back that way. But no, there is no residency requirement. No.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Next question. But going back to the Green Bay situation, moving over to there, they tell me that 40-page report is a bombshell with respect to some of the statements that were made. You know, we encourage Attorney Mike Patton that he really needs to, under color of law, get a copy of both that report and something that, see, this is a game on you. They'll do an initial report. You'll be looking at that, but you forget to ask about the supplemental. There is a supplemental report. In fact, there's also a supplemental report as it pertains to Apple Valley. And it's both the original report and the supplemental that you need to view to understand the depth of what was happening. And the supplemental report out of Green Bay, woo, man, these guys talk real bad about black officers. And remember, as we reported over the last 2 weeks, it was their statements about former Inspector Don Banham, current and most senior black officer Charles Adams, if you will, Lee Edwards, Lieutenant Lee Edwards, no relationship, and others, Gerald Moore, Sergeant Gerald Moore, if you will, who was at the scene of the original beginning of the chase involving Terrence Franklin. The statements that these guys made about their nigger police officers, it shocked the white officers in Green Bay, and particularly in light of there were a couple of officers there that night in the station who have worked closely with both, and the reason I specifically named Banham, Adams, and Moore is these gentlemen are a part of the very highly touted NFL security team.
Oh.
Yeah. These guys are highly trained. I mean, the NFL does not, one thing about them, even more than the NBA, Major League Baseball, et cetera, they do not fool around with the issue of security, okay, because their venue is bigger. You're talking about stadiums with 60, 70, 80,000 people. Man, the way them guys talked about those officers up there, and you're talking about close and personal, oh, it was outrageous. And so, Don, you have to understand, when the White Manifesto came out a couple of days ago, you understand it just tied in just how outrageous this is. And then I would take you back, as I said before, to the lawsuit filed by some of these same officers, including the current head of the Internal Affairs, Commander Arredondo, where they laid out with great detail and specificity the kind of racism that was going on in this department. Now, the city hurried up and settled, gave them $750,000, and pretended to close the book, okay? But there's been nothing but a vendetta against them ever since. And nobody's paying any attention.
Wow.
Doesn't want to pay any attention.
Not a word.
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
I just don't want to say a word.
I just want to say, you know, with all this going on, Mr. Edwards, we have not heard a peep out of the African American Leadership Forum, Gary Cunningham and others, and Headwaters Foundation, the NAACP here locally in Minneapolis, whatever they have here, and the Minneapolis Urban League, Scott Gray, and those people who run flagship organizations met to address at some component in their facilities social justice, and in this case, racial justice. Not even the Black Council on Black Minnesotans have came forward to have a press conference because this seems those guys. Yeah, and so I find it, you know, disheartening and discerning that these people will not, you know, speak up. And part of this, you know, and, you know, I'm coming from the right here, I think this DFL political plantation has these overseers pretty much trained, you know, to sit there and not say the word. And when you read it, when you read a statement in the newspaper that the chief is going to pledge dialogue and she's telling us that she's going to talk with Velma Corbell of the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, and she's going to get with some faith-based leaders. I mean, you're asking for that same crap that they had when they did that ceasefire junk and that youth violence summit over at Shiloh, you know, Shiloh International Ministry.
And Safe Streets. You're looking for two specific programs. Operation Ceasefire, which was out of Chicago, and Safe Streets, which is basically on the East Coast, but is in places like New Orleans and Memphis, where a delegation went out to Boston to take a look at it. Nothing ever happened because at that time Chief Tim Dolan said, I don't want that garbage here, and, you know, gave a couple hundred thousand dollars to one of our big churches over there at Shiloh, okay? And you heard no more about Operation Safe Streets or Operation Ceasefire. Yeah, yeah.
I know.
The phone lines are open. Give that number again, Don, in case to have some of our folks around the country, et cetera, because I know folks are trying to savor this and figure what the heck is going on. Give that number again, and then I have a very interesting kind of a piece of information that's going to kind of catch you off guard. Go ahead and give that number again.
Okay, phone lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. All right.
Let me just indicate this, that there's some information and there's some concern because there has been an attempt by some of the so-called leaders in Minneapolis to oust the NAACP president. Let me be delicate with this. Let me say it like this. There is reason to believe that on the night in question, back in November of 2012 at Bocarts in Apple Valley, as Minneapolis police officers and other law enforcement plummeted and beat four African Americans, that one of the responding sheriff's cars, and then when they were being booked in, because they were arrested at the scene, so nobody's talking about that, that when Woodard was booked in, that, and maybe one of the Dakota County sheriff's cars that, you know, took him down to the jail at either Hastings or et cetera, was the current president of the NAACP, who is a Dakota County deputy sheriff.
Oops.
And there is reason to believe that during the course of preparation for what was going to be the trial of these officers, which later became a plea bargain circus, if you will, to get them off of the hate crime charge, which is a felony under Minnesota and federal law, that attempts were made to put pressure on the NAACP president, who is a deputy sheriff, very respected, and that's a young Booker Hodges, who is deputy sheriff, who is a deputy sheriff in Dakota County. Isn't that ironic? You still there?
Yes, I am here.
Okay.
I was
you back and forth.
I'm screening some callers, Mr. Edwards, that are calling into the switchboard and deciding who's who right now. And we've getting some.
I got you, because we had Billy Bob calling in talking about the NIGs. Let me then spend the time, and you interrupt me. Let me spend the time on the complaint and filed with the. With the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. Now, Velma Corvell wasn't there, but Kip Brown was. Baby Kip Brown was there. In fact, I said he was acting director. You know, when I filed this complaint, there is quite a bit of information, and I'm going to give the case file number, and people are absolutely welcome to call Velma Corvell and have her produce. I challenge her to produce the complaint filed by yours truly, attested to, stamped by a note of public, that whole thing. 6457-EM-1F-RP. This complaint filed in 2007, Mr. Allen. And what happened was the police department controlled the actual investigation. It took them a year for the city attorney to indicate that I had no standing to bring this complaint. Now, isn't that fascinating? So the question that has to be asked is that with this so-called dog and pony show that you're putting together, at what point does the city attorney indicate that a person does not have any standing to bring any of these concerns to the so-called oversight commission, okay? Because the precedent has already been set in the matter of Ronald A. Edwards versus the city of Minneapolis, the Civil Rights Department. And so people are clear, I was not a victim of anything, but because, by the way, I helped write the civil rights legislation in this city 35 years ago, 40 years ago, I know what the intent is with respect to who has words, who has standing, okay? And what the city attorney's office said, now, Negro doesn't have standing to bring this complaint on behalf, get this, on behalf of black officers and a white lieutenant.
Wow.
So, maybe they can clarify for me personally, because I'm going to make it personal on that particular situation. Explain to me at what point it is determined that you have standing, you have the legitimacy, if you will, to file a formal complaint based on information. They always like to use that word, based on information. You know, they do that in affidavits when they go to get search warrants and essentially kick in your door and beat your brains out. But anyways, I'd like to hear that, Don, at some point, maybe over the next couple of weeks. Okay?
Yeah, that'd be nice. It'd be nice to hear that. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I just think it's a fair question. Also, I refer people back to the lawsuit, and we've got another half hour, by the way,
yes,
filed by five black police officers of the Minneapolis Police Department, who prevailed, by the way. There was a settlement with them. And I'd like to know if people were ever concerned about some of the allegations and where Chief Harto stood back in 2007 when the Mill City Five filed this complaint, okay? You know, I well remember Janae, and she knows that I well remember her, when she was working on the north side. In fact, one of the officers that came under her command was the same Alicia Clemens, who, quote-unquote, was the most effective litigant against the city of Minneapolis in a matter dealing with race. And repeat what we said at the top of the show, she won over $1 million from this department. No one ever talked about her. Her name is never mentioned. Yeah. Now, you know, she's called this program, and she's been back and forth with us. You know, we go at it. But she is a part of history, man, and I find it amazing that no one can allegedly find any of the information. You need to take a look at what happened in her process. I mean, the system tried to imprison her. You know, I mean, it was amazing, man, and actually ended her career as a police officer who was on track to probably become a commander or an inspector in this department. You know what I'm saying? And so you have so much of this history out here, and no one's saying anything. Let me also say this now at this point, and maybe someone will call in and express concern about these. Do you realize that we've not heard a single mumbling or reflection of what do you think, Mr. Allen, the state of mind of black officers are in this department right now as we speak?
Well, I don't think
no
they're
one
happy
talks
at all.
About black officers. Go ahead. I'm sorry, sir.
No, I just was saying I don't think they're happy at all, Mr. Edwards, the black officers.
But why is it that we, as a community, can't take up for them? You know what I'm saying? That no one has uttered a word about what this is having as an effect on black officers. See, I am a person who well remembers because I came to Cincinnati. I was brought into Cincinnati to help with the racial dispute that took place in the Cincinnati Police Department in the 1970s that tore that department apart and forced the federal government to step in and take control, where black and white officers actually fought. Don, they fought at a hearing inside the city council chambers. And, you know, the city hall in Cincinnati back in those days is one of those old eloquent buildings, you know, built around 1890. And this beautiful, chamber, which was the city council, them cats tore that room up. White and black police officers in Cincinnati fighting all out into the hallways, Don, fighting on the steps of City Hall and the Hall of Justice. The governor of the state of Ohio had to have put the National Guard, the Ohio National Guard, on full alert because they thought the city was going to blow up. The police had already, over a period of 3 weeks, killed six African-Americans, but members in the African-American community had killed four white cops.
Yep.
See, people don't talk about Cincinnati. But when you talk with Chuck Wexler, my good friend from Perth, the Police Research Institute, that is a standard introduction to departments about why you want to stay away from racial tensions, Cincinnati, Ohio. And yet, I have to say, on behalf of these black police officers, no one has said a mumbling word about how they're feeling. No one.
No.
In fact, I made inquiry before we went on the air, Mr. Allen. No one has even reached out to them.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No one has even reached out to them and said, you know, is there anything we can do, anything we should know? You know, you should be a part. By the way, I bet you Velma Corvell has no intention of having any black police officers involved in her group discussions. Oops.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. You know, and I don't know what Velma Corvell is even representing, you know, and it's really hard to understand what track they're on, because with this, you know, committee of seven, whoever they are, it's reminding me of the thing at, like, the Minneapolis Foundation, where they have a donor-guided committee to who they give money to in the Twin Cities, especially in the black community. And they will not release the name of the people on that committee. So, you know, there's money sitting there for North Minneapolis on Broadway, and they give the money to the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce, who we still don't know to this day what they're doing, what they have done. Well, we know what they have done, nothing, in the past 20, 30 years, and so are what they're going to do. And they will not return emails or telephone calls.
Yeah, but is that surprising, Don? I mean, surprising at all?
It's at the point, Ms. Edwards, where, you know, you're beating a dead horse with these folks, because they're not going to do anything. They're going to, you know... we can even talk about Stair Step Foundation and Alfred Babington Johnson and the money just he received from the Minnesota Department of Health for diabetes. And I'm sorry, I haven't heard one thing about diabetes in the black community from Stair Step Foundation or Alfred Babington Johnson. Okay? So if they give you six figures and you're supposed to do community engagement, where's the engagement? Where's the information? You know,
that's a damn good question. It's always subject to audit.
Yeah.
By the way, on this, what's being proposed over in the police situation, obviously there's going to be some cultural training money. Okay, keep that in mind. Cultural training money for leaders to come in and help. And let me tell you, the level of resentment by these white officers about these animals coming in telling us what it is that we should have an appreciation and respect for, you got to be real careful, because for 5 years we were, and the city was, the Minneapolis Police Department was mandated to interact with us and take our recommendations. But, I mean, you could see the animus, man, the anger. I mean, I'll never forget one of the key pieces to talk just a little bit about some of the things that we did. We, as an outgrowth of our investigation, actually stopped the Minneapolis Police Department for a while, though they're back to doing it again, of putting prisoners in the back of canine cars with the dog.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
And don't forget putting them in the trunk and peeing on them.
Yeah, but putting you in the back seat with the dog when these dogs are trained in such a way that it is not a good situation and you're handcuffed. And I can tell you that was quite a chore. Now, one of the key officers, black officers, that was just superb in putting together the necessary language, and then we carried it from the committee, was the current, get this now, was the current commander of internal affairs, Commander Arredondo. Okay?
Oh, wow.
One of the most respected and honest officers that you can find. But there was a lot of resentment by a lot of white officers that he allowed himself, quote unquote, in their words, to be positioned, because, see, that used to be entertainment. Now, I got to tell you, we're back to that here in the Twin Cities, though they are more cautious with regards to how they do it, because there is a policy in place. You're not supposed to put a prisoner in the back seat of your canine car with your doggy, okay? And you see, all this comes to mind when you talk in terms of the dog that was involved in tearing Terrence Franklin apart in that basement at 2717 Bryant Avenue South on the 10th day of May.
Oh, yeah.
2013. But there are things that are done. I mean, you know, we have had no significant increase And I see John Harrington is being commended. At least he came up with a couple of officers of color, particularly quite a few Somalis, in the hiring of 19 yesterday, the swearing in of 19 new transit officers for the Transit Authority. But do you know that we've not had a significant increase above 1.5% since the PCRC was officially disbanded on January 1, 2009? You know that we really have not recruited any significant number of African Americans, just like we have not recruited any significant number of black firefighters. Yeah. Yeah. Phone, people trying to get through to you, Don. Anything? Yeah, we got anything coming in?
No, that was Mr. Wilson. I directed him to the show if there's something going on. So we'll see what happens here in the next couple of minutes.
Okay.
I am getting. I've been going back and forth behind offline and kind of going through some callers that we've been getting that aren't the Don and Bond show quality. So that's been pretty interesting.
They're calling us the NIG word and are mad. And most of them are strong supporters of police misconduct and brutality. Yeah.
Yeah. And Mr. Edwards, one thing we got to let our listeners know today is that the race stuff within the Minneapolis police only came to light because the police in Green Bay said that, you know, they talked about Police Chief Harto's sexual preference.
Yeah,
orientation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know,
let's get out
if
while
that
we haven't
happened. You know, this wouldn't even been an issue.
Right. Why don't we do this? Why don't we be very clever like there? Why don't you talk in terms of some of the statements that some of these anonymous people are making? Let's have a little dialogue on that, where you know we take total control and authority to respond, and they don't get a chance to. What are some of the issues that they're saying about this particular matter, Mr. Allen?
Well, they're just saying that, you know, you niggers ought to leave the police chief alone, and you're homophobic, you know, when you talk. Well, it's not us calling, you know, the police chief a lesbian or a dyke or gay or anything else. It's her police officers in her department calling her that. And so we're
absolutely
just repeating what in the news and what, you know, the story that actually, Mr. Edwards, you broke on this show 3 weeks ago to the date before the Star Tribune
right.
or anybody else. And
that's
so,
right.
I mean, ahead of time, I had one guy asked me, do I even live in North Minneapolis? And I had, and why was I concerned with anything that was going on in Minneapolis? And I had to, you know, let him understand that there's 240 nonprofits in North Minneapolis and 85% of the executive directors and the management do not live in North Minneapolis, which that's why you have your economic sinkhole over there. So where I live is none of his damn business. Secondly, get a clue. And so,
well, let me say this, isn't it they want to call themselves taking it to these kinds of levels? See, I can well remember, and I know that Janae does, that when she and Holly, her partner, if you will, when they were working together, and by the way, this is not the North Side Minneapolis Police. It said last time I looked, the city charter covered the entire city of Minneapolis, and the Minneapolis Police Department serves the entire city. So only an idiot would raise the question about do you live on the North Side, et cetera. You know, this idiot doesn't live in the White House, but yet he's free to make comments about President Barack Obama, just as we are free to make comments about the crackhead Rush Limbaugh, okay? But I remember when she and her partner, significant other, were patrolling together and the kind of hate that was conveyed to them when she and Holly were working together as patrol officers, okay? And, you know, that person needs to be, you know, commenting, and I like what you said, Mr. Allen. We're not the ones that made the statements, you know. I've known the chief for years, you know, and Glory in the fact that she became the first female. I didn't look at the first lesbian. I began looked at the fact that she was the first female and that she had certainly paid her dues. She'd been in the department for 25 years, okay? But see, when I hear a person make a statement like that, they clearly are attempting to divert away from the issues. What are some of the other comments being made by Billy Bob?
Well, Billy Bob, you know, Mr. Edwards, I had to break it down to him because not only Billy Bob is calling, but we have some brothers in the hood that are texting and calling. So I just had, let me just play a little bit of what I had in the backdrop going on there while I'm talking to him. Yeah, hear a little bit of this.
Niggas are scared of revolution. But niggas shouldn't be scared of revolution. Because revolution is nothing but change. And all niggas do is change. Niggas come in for murk and change into pimping clothes. They hit the streets to make some quick change. Niggas change their hair from black to red.
Yeah, that's just a little bit of where I was playing for them in the background so they could hear, you know, and then, you know, so they would.
Oh, yeah.
So they would know what was going on. So I think that was the chief chiming in. So.
Okay, well, like I said, you know, they're certainly welcome to their thoughts. The only problem is that we require and demand intelligent reflection and understanding, particularly of the issues and the subject matter, you know. And again, if it had not been for some black journalists in Minneapolis, these folk wouldn't have known about any of these incidents. Oops.
No, and I'm very curious, Mr. Edwards, because I know that the Smokesman recorder is on top of this with you being there, but I'm just kind of a little worried about our buddies over north with the Insight News, who seems like they're in a whole different state. And could push the agenda of what's going on and let people know. And I'm actually in Studio A trying to search for the Insight News to see if they're even relevant.
I have not seen anything nor seen any independent commentary. Now, you know, it's one thing to, you know, go to the Black Wire service, Pan-African News and stuff like that. I mean, it's just great to know what's going on in Zimbabwe. I mean, you know, I'm an internationalist and clearly an internationalist historian, et cetera. In fact, I probably talk about the international scene more than anybody around. But right now it's important to talk in terms of what is happening to our community. You know, here is a longtime activist, K.G. Wilson, standing on a street corner in North Minneapolis with basically politically by himself, but certainly surrounded by young people, whose son was gunned down on Thursday evening in this city. And yet it's so difficult for the leaders, who are always there to have a payday, oops, that are not reaching out and at least showing, let me use this word, showing solidarity. Now, I heard that statement used 8 or 9 times in a meeting at the Urban League Thursday night about Terrence Franklin. We're going to have solidarity. It's all about solidarity and et cetera. And that's the reason that I engaged the line of questioning of the minister an hour ago, because I wanted to determine if the solidarity folks have, you know, amassed their hundreds, if you will, to stand with Minister K.G. Wilson on that corner in North Minneapolis at Fremont and Broadway. Apparently they haven't, okay? But I guess at some point, you know, solidarity will be in place. Now, you made a heck of a statement, Mr. Allen, to Minister Wilson when you said we need to come together and march to the chief's office to ask for a full update on how the investigation is going with respect to the minister. And the reason I feel comfortable with supporting the minister, because I know that this man has gone and worked with families and requested the police to give families updates and et cetera. I'll never forget a meeting involving he and myself and the others there, nobody's business, city officials, after the tragic death of Terrell Mays. Okay, I watched the minister ask and request and received a update personally to the mother, if you will, in her new home at that time, because she had had to flee the house that had been fired into, which cost the life of her, at that time, 3-year-old baby. And so I'm just trying to feel, where is the reciprocal consideration for the minister, who I know has oftentimes been out there and has attempted to facilitate and to help families deal with the heartbreak. And
exactly.
I was upgraded in many respects by the fact that Helen Williams, a longtime activist who has been doing this for quite some time, joined him for an hour today. there at Broadway. But I'm talking about the folks that are, you know, drawing the big money. You know what I mean? Who go down to the Minneapolis Foundation and to McKnight and to the Northwest Area Foundation with Gary Cunningham, and they talk about how they are involved in bringing a better sense of tranquility and peace and order to the community. Okay? Where are they at today?
You know, it's Saturday, Mr. Edwards, and, I mean, the work week ends at 5 o'clock or actually 8 p.m. at J.D. Hoyt's, and they're not going to get any money. There's no grant money available for them to even discuss this. And until, you know, until Chief Harto comes out of her pocket and the city of Minneapolis decides that, okay, we're going to get these faith-based loonies to handle these animals and give them a little money, then you'll see them out in the community handing out flyers and, you know, doing bang. You know, you can print 500 flyers for $3, and the city might give them 100,000. So they'll be handing you flyers, you know, while their bank accounts and their bellies full, and people starving on the corner getting shot. So again, the circle of insanity will repeat itself over and over and over again. I mean, we've seen it. We can talk about CSI because there's no report. Clarence Hightower, if you're out there, it'd be nice to see that report. You can talk about, again, the Minnesota Department of Health with Alfred. I'm sorry, Mr. Edwards. I keep ragging on this because I'm pretty pissed off about this situation. But Alfred Babinson Johnson with the with the $35 million back between 2005 and 2007 from U.S. Bank and the Cieza, Tires Plus, Dairy Queen, and Burger King, which he has nothing now. And, you know, we got little things like this where they keep running to these same self-appointed Negroes and the black community gets nothing. So,
well, you know, in the case of the great Cieza and et cetera, I know that a lady by the name, who now is a government state official in Texas, by the name of Marcia Samuel Staten, I know she'd like to get some of her money back.
I agree.
Yeah, because Marcia was the banker for many of those ventures, and nobody likes to talk about that either. Marcia Samuel Staten. Some of y'all out there know, you know who I'm talking about, and you know that she was the banker, attempted to do a lot of things in this community to get black enterprises on the move. Everywhere and everything that she was involved in with a sense of absolute commitment and purity and honesty, she was stabbed in the back. But I know she'd like to get some of her money back. Oh, I'm sorry, though. We're not supposed to talk about those kinds of things because Chris Stewart and others maintain that we are haters. But how is telling the facts and the truth, how does that fall into the category of being a hater?
You know, that's, about something, you know, when you get, yeah, they want us to talk about puppy dogs and America and how great these organizations are doing, but still you don't have any word or any significant movement other than a social cabal where they all get together and talk about their master's degrees and PhDs and, you know, how many times they went out and cheated on their wives. And you know, Chris Stewart doesn't want to challenge me on blackness, neither does Velma Corbell. Because what they go home to is not blackness, and I'll leave it at that.
You're being kind there. Maybe when we start, here's what we'll start. We'll start just talking about who had dinner at the top of Sevens and the what you call that hotel down the street there across from the Orpheum.
Yeah.
Who went to what concert. Why don't we start doing that? We'll start talking about that. Because
that's apparently
where folks are at.
Yeah, that's what they want to hear. They want to hear, there's a Friday night dance with some liquor being sold down at Elixir, or we're going to meet at J.D. Hoyt's Friday night and have a drink and just, you know, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, they would love that, Mr. Edwards, if that's all we were posting. You know, yesterday I was a little bit concerned, Mr. Edwards, because in our production meeting we had talked about a meeting that was at the Urban League on Thursday regarding Terrence Franklin. Terrence Franklin.
Terrence Franklin, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I was kind of shocked that these same people are still getting together and just spreading these malicious rumors without any evidence about the death. Okay, it's unfortunate that this gentleman was shot, but also the Hispanic gentleman that was killed and his girlfriend, who we have not heard a peep about since
Absolutely.
That day.
That is interesting. It seems like there's a lot more pieces that these people could put together other than, you know, sensationalizing it, saying, oh, yeah, he was shot 5 times in the back of the head, 2 times in the back. And personally, I
and
have
once
not
in the arm. Once in the arm. It's up to 8 shots now. Mm-hmm.
8 shots, yeah. I have not seen that report. And I just ask these people, it's not that I don't support justice in this case for Terrence Franklin, because I don't think any brother should be quartered in the basement, bit by a dog, beat up by police officers, and end up dead. And he's just a suspect. So with that said, you know, maybe they can get a little bit more facts and put them out there and you know, a plan and kind of let's see what's going on, what's happening with that before they start, you know, hyping people up. Because, you know, you're doing nothing but being, you know, a cross between Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. And I think that they need to go back. And again, someone told me yesterday that I was I need to build this up instead of tear it down. And if you're building stuff, something, or if you're to use that building argument, you have to assume that the foundation was solid. In this case, the foundation is not solid, obviously. So let's get some more information and let's be strategic about how we look for this justice for Terrence Franklin. And also, you know, how quickly we forget about the mysterious circumstances of Jerome Gordon Jackson. Did he really jump off the Hennepin Avenue Bridge?
Oops.
Yeah. So, come on now. There's a lot going on.
Our young Mr. DeMarcus Booker,
yes,
who will be sentenced in a couple of weeks or less to at least a minimum of 5 years in the federal penitentiary for allegedly having a gun in a car, that the weapon was found 2 days after the car was put into the police forensic impound lot. And he has been left to just die on the vine, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen no protest about that, though we talked about it for 3 months on these programs. And,
yeah, no one said a word.
Nobody had any.
I understand, you know, Ms. Harris, but some of the people leading that group in the Terrence Terrell Franklin, I mean, I understand that you can change your life. It's okay if at one point you was a rapist or a crook or a robber and you decide to be a community organizer and lead the way. I'm going to go forgive you for that. But, you know, if you're going to do that, don't be afraid of, you know, the police department, because your stuff is taken care of. You know, you're not buying any crack and smoking it on a regular basis. So, you know, you should be okay. You know, if they ask you to drop a drug test, you should be clean as a newborn. So,
yeah.
With that said,
yeah, well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, I would think that there should be no further worry if you paid your debt to society, if you will. But let me, as we go into the last 2 minutes, I am compelled because of my role as a commissioner, my role as a facilitator and monitor as it pertains to police matters in this city. And, of course, I'm well-versed on the history, you know, so I'm not going to sit around and apologize. I just am amazed that there has been no outreach and no reaching out to black police officers in this city. Now, that, you know, there are some black police officers who they just love everything the white boys do to them, but there is a hardcore group of black officers, basically senior officers, who are absolutely devastated. I mean, devastated, Mr. Allen, by what has happened and the demeanor and the animosity that is being shown to them. And I've not seen a single piece written. I've not heard of a single press conference in which someone has said, you know, we need to reach out. I've not even heard anybody be able to quote a black police officer of any rank about how they're feeling. It's like the system, the mayor, the chief, and them said, well, you know, the one thing you don't do is don't ask black police officers how unhappy and how threatened they are. Because I still maintain, based on the way things are going, we're perilously close to a situation where we're going to have a shootout involving black and white officers. You know, it could be just a single officer or two officers go at it, or there could be the accidental shooting as they did with the beloved Dewey Null, who was so affected and devastated by his wounds and et cetera that even after winning, being awarded over $4 million, but clearly he stayed alive to provide for his family. But no one talks about the fact that this man committed suicide because of the animosity and the hatred and the racism. Do we know an Asian officer shot by his own fellow officers who pretended they didn't know who he was? Think about it, Mr. Allen.
Oh, yeah. We'd like to thank everybody for listening today to the Ron and Don Show at Home Point. The podcast will be available immediately after the show. And tune in next week, same time, same station. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Allen.
Bye-bye.
Just as you, as I take you out.